couple of comments that I would like to make that I think will be beneficial since we're actually still into the introductory phase. The introductory phase of our Bible study on disciplines for the disciple. And we began our study actually 2 weeks ago. I'll remind you that we're putting the material up on the website. So if you miss the study, then you'd be able to hear the audio of that study. Although last week I forgot and didn't have the recorder with me, so last week's isn't available. But we had gotten down to letter B on the bottom of the first page, but it's actually page 3 in the booklet. Some examples of the spiritual disciplines. You'll remember that we, as we were studying those last week, we talked about the fact that this is kind of an overview of what we'll be discussing for the entirety of the curriculum in this class. And so we're not going to try to discuss these things in detail, which means we got to about half of them. So we're on number 5 there. And we'll be talking about that in just a few moments. Sorry about the fact that it's as hot as it is this evening. The air conditioner's been going all afternoon, so it's 106 degrees outside and humid. I guess it just doesn't quite keep up. So, again, in Hebrews chapter 5, just one thing to keep in mind, because this is talking about Bible study and the fact that Bible study takes effort. And the actual number 8 on our list is teaching, and that's the text that we're going to be looking at. But a point that I want to make with regard to this is the differences that are present with regard to the amount of knowledge that any particular individual has, which has to be addressed whenever you're engaged in a particular study of the Bible. And that's not an easy thing to do. In fact, I would ask that you bear with a teacher if he is in a class of this size, for example. In the realization that you have individuals with rather different levels of knowledge that are all gathered together to study. And because of that, it's sometimes a challenge to be able to challenge individuals who may have more knowledge without perhaps becoming too deep or too difficult for those who have less to understand. And at the same time, if you want to make sure that those who have less knowledge have sufficient understanding to be able to get something out of the class, you may not sufficiently challenge someone who has more knowledge. And that's always a struggle. It's always a difficult thing to do. Some teachers do it better than others. Some curriculum is a bit more flexible with regard to these things, where that can be done. This is actually somewhat, I wouldn't say first principle particularly, but it is foundational to growing and maturing as a Christian. So these are things that we need to know, need to be familiar with, and need to be reminded of. And that's, you remember what the Apostle Peter indicated, as long as he remained in his temple, in his body, he was going to continually remind them of things that they even already knew, to strengthen them in those things. And it's something we all need to be aware of. So it may be that some in the class will be looking at these things in detail for the first time, and from that deriving benefits, and then others, it may be something familiar to them, and it will simply serve as a reminder. One thing I would like to encourage those who are more mature and have more knowledge, and not only more knowledge, but also some practical experience with regard to these particular disciplines, that you take the opportunity to write those down, to be cognizant of them, so that you can give suggestions to others who may not have that same background that you have, methods of study, things that make your prayer life more effective, suggestions to help make an individual more consistent with regard to assembly or worship. These kinds of things would be beneficial, and that's going to be an aspect or a part of our study as we get involved in the actual lessons themselves. We'll get back to Hebrews chapter 5 and verse 12 in just a few moments. And by the way, the reason that is apropos to this particular comment is because there, if you remember, in verses 12 through 14, he is admonishing the brethren there. Because they should have progressed, should have matured as children of God, but because they had not diligently applied themselves to study, they had actually regressed. But that indicates that here were individuals who were in need again to be taught the rudiments and the first principles of the gospel of Christ. But there are others in verse 14 that aren't referred to that would be characterized as those who are of full age and have that ability to discern the solid fruit of the word. So there are, again, different levels, and we have to try to address and deal with all of those in the teaching that we do. We'll get back into Hebrews chapter 5 a little bit later. But we want to start off by looking at Hebrews chapter 13. We're again on number 5 with regard to new disciplines. And there's a point to be made with regard to the text of Hebrews chapter 13 as it applies to the discipline of giving. And if you'll look at the text, it's a very short one, Hebrews chapter 13 and verse 16. These were a series of quick admonitions. You'll find in the Apostle Paul's writing, and again, you'll remember in our study on Sunday morning that it's very difficult to attribute the book of Hebrews to a specific author, although the preponderance of evidence leads most to believe, or many to believe, that Paul wrote it. But one thing that is characteristic of all of Paul's epistles is that as he draws near to the end of his letter, he gives some assorted admonitions, some quick suggestions to strengthen individuals as Christians. That's certainly the case here in Hebrews in the 13th chapter toward the end, as he talks about the necessity of submitting to those who are in a position of authority and various other things. You'll notice in verse 16 he says, there in Hebrews 13, do not forget to do good and to share, for with such sacrifices God is well pleased. Do not forget to do good and to share. The word share there is something that is indicative of giving. If you'll notice also, just very quickly, going over to Acts the 20th chapter with that accompanying passage, in verse 35 of Acts chapter 20, verse 35, these are the final exhortations that Paul gives to the elders of Miletus. He says, I have shown you in every way by laboring like this that you must support the weak and remember the words of the Lord Jesus. As he said, it is more blessed to give than to receive. The giving there and the sharing that's under consideration in both of these passages would be something beyond simply putting a check in the plate on Sunday morning. I just want you to understand that when we're talking about the concept of giving, though the first step will be contribution, as we get into that study, will be an aspect of that. What we're talking here is about something that is perhaps more of a central part of our lives as we seek to live for the Lord, something we should be always aware of. I would remind you of the text of James 1 in verse 27, where the visiting of the fatherless and widows in their affliction is stated as being part of the practice of pure religion. And so this is, when you talk about visiting the fatherless and widows in their affliction, it has reference to their want or their need, that which is lacking in their lives, which would commonly have an economic aspect to it, for example. And so the practice of pure religion is to help individuals. Part of that help that we render is, of course, spiritual, but part of it is physical. And one of the things that characterizes the people of God is a willingness to give what we have to others to supply the lack that may be present in their lives. And that is, of course, the center of Jesus' account of the Good Samaritan, and is an expression of loving your neighbor. It is something that was characteristic of the disciples in the first century. You'll remember in the early chapters of the book of Acts, as the disciples sold possessions that they had to put into a common treasury that all those who were there could be cared for, those who had been displaced as they had remained in Jerusalem. And so there is, number one, a recognition that others have needs, and that as we are able to fill those needs or to help them with those needs, that we need to be willing to give or to share with them. This is something that's characteristic of the people of God. It's certainly something that was characteristic of our Lord. It can have application far beyond the mere physical. You remember, silver and gold have I none, but what I have I'll give to you. But it certainly would be inclusive of that. It would be inclusive of the first day of the week contribution, as God gave instructions, and as a part of those instructions to lay by in store, as you have been prospered, was for the purpose of supplying the needs of the indigent saints, those who were in the midst of famine or other distress. But it certainly is not just that, but it would be inclusive of it. When you look at hospitality, I think, in fact, that when you're talking about giving in this sense, that hospitality, as found in verse 7, would be an adjunct of it. It's certainly something that is worthy of its own discussion. But that type of giving is something that is a bit more extensive than merely a discussion of the first day of the week contribution. And sometimes when we talk about giving, you have a sermon topic on giving, or if you've got a discussion of worship and we talk about giving, then we kind of limit our discussion. We're going to try to extend it a little bit and to be inclusive of that, but not limit it to a discussion of the first day of the week contribution. So anybody have any comments or questions that they want to make or raise with regard to the two passages or the subject? And again, these are supposed to be introductions, so we'll discuss them, but we'll have an opportunity to discuss them later. Well, then go on to the next. And after that, giving is the call to assemble. And, of course, one of those passages is found in the book of Psalms. And the 122nd Psalm, which is one that many Christians are familiar with, Hebrews chapter 10 as well. I just, to be honest, if I'm going to try to talk to someone about the importance of assembly, and when we talk about assembly, please, again, let's not limit ourselves in this discussion to a Sunday morning assembly. In fact, the concept of a Sunday morning assembly that is more important than other opportunities of assembling is a rather sectarian concept. Let me rephrase that. It is a rather traditional concept that has unfortunately some sectarian connotations and problems associated with it. I'll just give you one example. When I was a young man, we had opportunity, my parents and I, to go visit family in Houston and visited with them and went to services with them that same morning. We didn't have any knowledge of what that worship service was going to be like. I think, if I remember correctly, that was the first time I ever saw, I can't say that for certain. I'm not sure exactly what kind of projection it was, but they were projecting things on a big screen and it was just very, very different from what I was used to as a youngster at worship. But the thing that just shocked me more than anything else is that as soon as the Lord's Supper was served, about 20-30% of the people got up and left. I mean, it was an amazing thing to me. People were actually getting up during the worship and walking out the front door because they had come for the purpose of partaking of the Lord's Supper. And they had done that, and they had somewhere to go or something to do. And so they were leaving. And I think that even with regard to some Christians of a more conservative bent, there is a view that the Lord's Supper is the purpose of the assembly. And I want you to understand that it is a purpose of the assembly, but it's not the purpose of the assembly. Now, when in Acts the 20th chapter, verse 7, where we are told that Peter had come to Troas, the disciples came together on the first day of the week to break bread. The significance of this is that this is the day in which that observance is to be held. In fact, the only scriptural precedent that we have in Scripture as to the observance of the supper in the kingdom is on the first day of the week, and that's what we do as well. But having said that, there were other things that they did, among them the preaching until midnight. And you can't accuse me of ever doing that. Come close a few times, but never to midnight. But those other things were done as well. We're told to worship. We're told to sing, to pray, to engage in the other acts of worship. And there are opportunities that we have, and we're not limited with regard to the times in which we sing or the times in which we pray. Those things are to be done that often. We have opportunity to do so. We're going to sing a bit later on during our time together this evening after our class is over. We have an evening period of worship. And when we talk about the concept of assembly, I think that the two passages that are chosen here are very appropriate and very important. One, because in Hebrews chapter 10, it says that we're not to forsake the assembling of ourselves together, which would give a command, an admonition. And here in Psalm 122, we are given the motivation, or at least what ought to be, the characteristic attitude toward assembly in verse 1, when the psalmist says, "I was glad when they said to me, 'Let us go into the house of the Lord.'" And this, of course, is an expression from the psalmist, which indicates the attitude that he had with regard to the opportunity afforded him to worship God and to come together with those who were his brethren for that purpose. That's a wonderful, wonderful thing. It was a special thing for the Israelite to have opportunity to go to the temple. It was a significant event. And when you consider the fact that in our activities that we're offering up praise to God, and he is worthy of such praise, it is and can be construed as the most important thing that we do each week. It is an opportunity for edification, as indicated in Hebrews 10. It is an opportunity to be around those of like precious faith and receive such encouragement. That when an individual says, and this is a common statement made, that I only have to come on Sunday morning, or an individual asks, "How often do you have to come? What's required of us? What's the obligation?" Well, that is, number one, an indication of immaturity. Number two, it's asking the wrong question. The question ought not to be how often do I have to come, but how often do I get to? That's the attitude that Paul had here. I mean, not Paul, David had here in this particular psalm. In other words, whenever it comes to expression of adoration to God and of diligence with regard to the Christian life and the obligations that are there, anytime an individual has an attitude that I don't want to, or it's a burden to me, or what's the minimum amount I have to do, the attitude that individual is expressing is something that is troublesome, it's problematic, and can certainly impact his standing with God. And if you have that attitude, or you feel that way, it's something that you need to address, because it is certainly a dangerous thing. And I think when you look at passages like this, it's something that that indicates it, especially with regard to Psalm 122. Anybody want to comment or say anything about that particular psalm? Those words. Yes, Roger.
Oh, I just have another anecdote here. We were at a family reunion picnic over the 4th of July, my son and daughter, everybody was there. And it was on Sunday afternoons when we had our picnic. And it got to be kind of late in the afternoon, and my son says to his wife, and says, "Are we going to go to church tonight?" Which was his way of, it's not that so much a question whether you're going or not, it's just a way of saying, "Isn't it about time we got ready, you know?" And she said, "Well, of course it's what we do." And I just thought that was such a great answer. I was just kind of eavesdropping on their conversation. It's what we do. And it ought to be what we do. And while you're right, it ought not to be a burden. Sometimes it can be. Sure. Sometimes you just don't feel good, or you've had a bad day, or just whatever reason. But if it's what you do, it kind of gets you past that little speed bump, you know, and on back again. So
yeah. When I say, and to make it clear, when I say that it's should not be considered a burden, we're talking characteristically so, yeah, because there are times when, whether it be health or even a rough day or other kinds of difficulties, can cause us to where it takes extra effort and to strive to do that. The Christian's attitude toward assembly and toward worship, the opportunity to hear teaching, and to edify others, which again I think is significant in Hebrews 10. This is something that should not be considered a why do I have to. It should be considered it's wonderful that I have opportunity to. That's the way in which a Christian and a faithful Christian, one who is a strong, mature Christian, will approach that. And yet, if you ask me to do it, you take two individuals, and I'm not going to ask you to do this. Please don't. But I'm just making a point. You can go to the back and you can ask Jerry for the roster, because we take attendance. He checks off who's here and who's not. And you can go down and you can. He likes X's and check marks. Here's what the X's are for. So he goes and you look at the names and you find a bunch of X's and you find a bunch of check marks. And you go and talk to the person with all the X's and ask them about the same assembly and ask them about why the X's. And then you go and talk to the person with all the check marks and you ask them about assembly and why all the check marks. You're going to get very different answers, very different points of view, and a pretty clear indication of the difference between immaturity and apathy and maturity and zeal. And when they say, okay, wait a second, are you saying that the litmus test or that it's assembly? No, I'm not. But it is a characteristic individual, and often it is something that indicates a point of view and an attitude toward these things. And I'm sorry, but when I see it, and I do, and I pay attention, when I see it, it's almost invariably that way, that those who are mature and those who are zealous, then they've got an attitude toward assembly that when I can be there, I'm going to be there. And that's what God expects of us. Yes, sir. Justin.
I'm trying to bite my tongue back here. But I'm failing. There are different benefits to different kinds of assembling. And it's interesting that sometimes we have people that are becoming atrophied in certain aspects of their spiritual life because the assembling that they're doing is edifying them, and it's stimulating them to love and good deeds in one particular aspect, but it's neglecting another aspect. And I tell you right now that my favorite assemblies by far are the ones in people's homes, the singings that we have in people's homes, the Bible studies we have in people's homes. But that wasn't even what set me off and got me started talking, not by the time. It was when you said, don't go back there and ask Jerry. And I think that would be a fabulous idea. Go back there and talk to the people that aren't coming to service.
Well, okay.
Go back there and talk to the people that are. I'm telling you, you're going to be able to be an encouragement, and you're going to be able to get encouragement just by doing that task.
Yeah, just don't tell them that Stan said to go check. Maybe I should rephrase that. In other words, I don't want to be the impetus of it. That's something that we all have the responsibility to do for one another. Certainly. And again, keeping that in mind, a point. In fact, I'm going to deal with that a little bit in Hebrews chapter 10. So go with me there in this section of Scripture, verses 24 and 25. Again, a number of exhortations given here in verses 24 and 25 have a specific admonition to the Hebrew Christians. And there is a reason for the admonition, reason behind it. He says, let us consider one another in order to stir up love and good works, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together, as is the manner of some, but exhorting one another, and so much the more as you see the day approaching. Now, one of the points that Justin made there is that there are different kinds of assembling together. And again, we talk about the assembly, and there is a worship assembly, and there is a distinction that we need to make in that regard. The Apostle Paul makes that distinction, I think, in a number of occasions in his epistle to the Corinthians, 1 Corinthians 5 and 16, both would be examples of that. You remember the discipline that the church in Corinth was to express toward the erring sinner in 1 Corinthians 5, the immoral individual, was to be done in the assembly. When you come together, you are to withdraw yourselves from this brother. So it's it was a call of assembly on that particular occasion. 1 Corinthians 16, there was a specific instruction given for the first day of the week assembly to be a time that you consistently and systematically give the Apostle Paul's instructions to the Corinthians, as he did other churches, rather than there be special collections. In other words, he wanted a systematic collection that gave them instruction in that regard, and it was to be done on the first day of the week. But I want you to notice in Hebrews chapter 10, verse 24, verse 20-25, and I've heard this so many times, not to forsake the assembly, not to forsake the assembly, the assembly, the assembly, and that's not what the text really says. It's not to forsake the assembling of ourselves together. And so there was something that was wrong, characteristically wrong with some individuals at this time. We had a very significant event that was about to happen. It was very, very, very soon. Most writers believe that the book of Hebrews, since it was written to Hebrew Christians and there is nothing there said about the destruction of the temple, that it must have been written before AD 70 when Jerusalem was destroyed and the temple was destroyed, or Jerusalem was sieged and the temple was destroyed. And so most of the scholars believe that the book was written probably AD 68, 69, but before. But this text, if you'll notice, there in verse 25, when he calls them to assemble and to be there, he says, "And so much the more as you see the day approaching," it really is most probable that the day that's in consideration there has reference to the day of judgment upon Israel, that day when the temple would be destroyed. This would be a very difficult time to be a Hebrew. And it would be a time in which their faith would be tested. In other words, this is a day of judgment that would include persecution and difficulty for these Hebrew Christians. And so as this day is approaching, as it's drawing closer, there is going to be the need for their faith to be strengthened. There's going to be need for them to be together for the purpose of encouraging and edifying each other. And so it is a dangerous thing when that event is drawing near for them to not take advantage of this opportunity to be encouraged and to be strengthened and to be helped by one another. And that's why this exhortation is given. The thing is, however, that while there may not be a specific prophesied event in our lives that would necessitate this same type of encouragement, the fact is that it is characteristically needful for each and every one of us due to the tribulations and trials that beset each of us. I don't think that it's inappropriate, though I don't think it's the day that's under consideration, even to contemplate that within the concept of judgment. As you recognize the ephemeral nature of life, as James said, it's a vapor that appears for a little while and vanishes away, that judgment draws closer with each day. There is the need for steadfastness. There is the need for us to be zealous. And the way in which we are strengthened in that is obviously the case here, as expressed by the Hebrew writer, is by us coming together and assembling for the purpose of edifying and encouraging one another. A lot of times people kind of get this wrong a little bit for a number of reasons. One, they think that's just talking about the Sunday morning assembly, which again is something that is of rather traditional and more modern origin. The idea that it's a being on Sunday morning, that's the chosen time. There's nothing in Scripture to indicate that. But also, with regard to the concept of exhortation, to exhort one another. It didn't say here not to forsake the assembling of ourselves together in order to receive exhortation. See, I mean, and that's the sectarian concept of worship. That's why you will have individuals that they will sit in the pew and they'll have people come and perform for them. People get up there and they'll have come this week to our services because our special guests are going to be. And so people will come and they'll give their testimonies or they've got special singing groups or whatever the case. And they sit in the pew and they receive their exhortation and they clap. That's one of the most peculiar things that you see that is so characteristic of religious worship today is that it basically is a performance. And people have the idea that I'm a member of this church because of what I'm going to receive. They're going to come, and you know, that's the preacher's responsibility, and the choir director, and the worship leaders, and all of those individuals are doing this. They're working, you know, long hours every day to put together a program to encourage me, to edify me, to give me exhortation. And we had one lady who was visiting with us just recently that when I would ask her, say, you know, well, it's good to see you today, she would say, well, I've come to get my blessing. And which is fine. I mean, it is a wonderful thing, but that's not what she meant by that. You know, she wasn't interested in being involved in doing, in exhorting and encouraging. She just wanted to get. And that's a sectarian concept of assembly. And that's why there are choirs rather than congregational singing. That's why there are performers rather than mutual edification. And that's what's something that is extremely important for us to understand. When you come, it's not to receive the blessing, but rather to bless someone else. That's what Peter writes. Indicated. He said, you know, you need encouragement, but others need encouragement as well. When you come, you make sure that you edify, you build up, you strengthen others. You've got to be there in order to do that. And there's a blessing here. When we go and assemble, then we are blessed. But when you go and assemble, you have a responsibility to edify. If you're not there, you can't edify. And that is the exhorting one another. Don't neglect the opportunity that you have to exhort someone else. And I don't know, you know, how many times I've heard that. I remember one particular class where an individual said, because it was a class that was designed for Christian evidences, and that person didn't have any doubts, they weren't interested in coming to the class. Not use it, it's not going to help me. And that was my answer. Well, then come and share that strong faith that you have with the brethren who may be having some problems with regard to these particular issues. You may not have an issue with it, but you can have it. So you can strengthen someone else. And that's the attitude that all of us ought to have with regard to assembly. It's, of course, an opportunity to worship. It's an opportunity to be encouraged and strengthened by it. But in the text of Hebrews chapter 10, we are to consider one another. And we are to be the stir-uppers. We are to consider one another to stir up love and good works. And the way in which we do that, at least in part, is by coming together. And assemblies, being with each other in worship and in study and such for such encouragement. So it's an important thing. Yes? Yes.
Colossians 3:16 is a lot of work on this. We all bring it up when we talk about singing, which I really like last week. But the interesting about that verse, it talks about what you're addressing there, that the word of Christ telling you richly in all wisdom, teaching and admonishing one another, psalms and hymns and spiritual songs. But we don't sing the songs to one another. Singing with grace in your hearts to the Lord. The reason we assemble is to worship God. In the worship of God in the assembly, the things that are sung, prayers that are prayed to God, the teaching that goes on, surely admonishes and edifies one another. That's not the primary reason. It's the singing is to the Lord. And if we've got some songs that we like to sing, we're sad about we're singing to each other. And that's the reason the song is written. And the song itself is not a song of worship. That's very interesting if it would be put that way. Teaching and watching one another, singing while we are singing to the Lord.
And the sentiments that are expressed as we are worshipful toward God and the hymns are proper are instructive. They are encouraging. So they serve that dual purpose. But you're right. I mean, and we need to recognize that. And again, I think that's often what is missed. And it is. We'll just take this. You know, I mentioned this in our singing last week. I recognize the part that the lyrics and the melody, I mean not the lyrics, but the melody plays and the four-part harmony that plays and be an encouragement. I think that James indicated that when he talked about if an individual is cheerful, let him sing a song, that the beautiful melodies and such have that ability to lift our spirits. There's something magical about singing, not magical, but something that is uplifting about singing in that regard. So we recognize that as the case. But it seems to me that in some circumstances, that unless there is, you know, an event, a say, because it's kind of something you see in among we get handouts, we get flyers from other congregations, and you know, here at Westside we've got our quarterly singing, and it's something that we do have some visitors, but it's a small thing. It's not something where there are hundreds and hundreds of people that are coming into the building and packing in. But there are those kinds of things. The annual singing. So once a year, and then people from all over, they come. It's a big event. And why? Because we're getting together, and this is so exciting, and all these people, and we're, you know, and the songs are beautiful and wonderful. That's fine. And it's a wonderful thing. But remember that what those are opportunities to come and worship God. It's not about seeing old friends. At least not during the time together. It's not about how beautiful it is. It's not about performance. And I think that really that's a problem that we've got as a people, because so much about everything that surrounds us in this culture is about performance. We go to sporting events, performances. We go to movies, we go to plays, we go to, you know, performances, performances, performances. And so when we come here, then for some of us, there may be that danger of looking at it. What are you doing for me? I'm doing for you. When in reality, the first thing we need to remember is what we're supposed to be doing for God. And that is offering up our praise to Him. It is worship to Him first and foremost. And if that is the case, if there are only five there, and none of them can hold a tune and bucket, it's still a wonderful thing that can be something that's a great encouragement, edification, and instructive as they worship God. And every bit is legitimate, every bit is valid, and every bit is important is if you've got 500 trained singers with their beautiful voices. And that's the kind of thing that we want to emphasize with regard to this assembly. It's what you do for the Lord, certainly, but how it can benefit others as you participate in this. Boy, I'm going too slow. We're going to have to speed up and just let this series. Yes?
First, the comments that Dennis made, you kind of tied in along with a comment that I was going to make. And you talk about denominations, and they come down there and be entertained, and they're the spectators, they're the choir, and all that stuff. And we've probably heard this before, that actually God is the spectator, and we're the not actors, but you know what I mean there. That so God is the spectator. We're it's to Him, you know, as
at least the direction is to Him.
So really, it's kind of a misnomer to call this auditorium. I don't make it wrong, but you know, if we don't come here to be entertained for you to preach to us.
Well, I hope you don't, because I'm just not something I have. I don't want that pressure.
Gain knowledge or admonish whatever.
I don't know. I may be strange. I use the word services sometimes. I don't even like that term, church services, because it sounds like what you're talking about, that is, we come here to get serviced, like you take your car in to get the oil changed. You know, come in needing something, somebody does it for you, and you leave.
Well,
I don't know if that's an appropriate word or not, but I feel a little uncomfortable using it for some reason.
If I'm not mistaken, I mean, the kind of indication would be that it's a service that we render to God. I think it would be more the indication of that as the part. But I
don't think that's the way it's
the attitude.
It's like we hold church services, yeah. The time of our services, or, you know, and it's kind of like this way and not.
Yeah, no, that's a good point, is that consider this with regard to assembly as it's outward. It's what I am doing for God and my brethren rather than what I'm getting out. Again, you're going to get, and I may go back to the giving. You know, it's more blessed to give than receive. As you give out, then you are blessed greatly as you participate in these things. But it's certainly in all these things an indication of obligation. We don't have much time, but I did just want to read Hebrews 13 and verse 2. With regard to hospitality. We'll pretty much pass over the concept of teaching because we discussed that some at the beginning of our time together. This will allow us to get through this section, and we'll pick up with the concept of discipleship. Spend a little bit of time on that next week and get into the second lesson. But I do want you to notice the text there in Hebrews 13, because the last number 7 here is and the importance of hospitality. This is an extremely important part of the Christian's life. His expression of his faith. And hospitality, being hospitable, is something that, because it's not within the worship assembly, I suppose, or it's not something, it just doesn't always get the attention that it needs, and we don't fully understand our individual Christian responsibilities in the area of hospitality. So if you'll notice in Hebrews 13:2, the statement made, do not forget to entertain strangers, for by doing so, some have unwittingly entertained angels. You'll notice the phrase that is given after number 7, showing kindness to strangers often results in a blessing. So it is something that is certainly beneficial to us. But we do want to emphasize, as we get into our discussion of hospitality, we want to talk about what it is, what our responsibilities are, we'll of course, and maybe give some suggestions. Now, this would be an area where individuals could, we can make some application as to the ways in which you can go about accomplishing this, being more hospitable, fulfilling your responsibilities to God in these areas. So it will be something that I think will be beneficial as well. One of the things that I want you to, and this will be the last thing I'll say tonight, one of the things I want you to keep in mind as we look at these things is what all of these things are important. And what I want you to consider is the importance of being well-rounded. In track, you have specialists, you have sprinters, or you have long-distance runners, or you have an individual who has a particular discipline, a high jumper or a pole vaulter. But you got this one guy out there, and he's a decathlete. And the decathlete runs sprints, runs middle distance, runs long distance, he throws the shot put, he throws the javelin, he high jumps, he long jumps, he does pole vaulting, all of those kinds. There's 10 events that he does. And he is considered, or at least he used to be, often it was called the best athlete in the world. When you know the Olympic gold medal champion in the decathlon is the best overall athlete on the face of the earth because he has mastered most things better than anyone else. But the idea is he's a well-rounded athlete. He can do it all. And I think that's kind of a picture that I want to get as we continue these discussions. As we talk about each individual discipline, then I want you to keep in mind, let's not get too focused on the trees that we miss the forest. And that is that what we're trying to develop here is someone who is a strong, faithful Christian in all of these areas, a well-rounded Christian. And as such, the type of individual God has to be. Maybe that's a good picture to consider and contemplate before we come together again next week. So we'll pick up there on page 4, Roman numeral 2, the concept of discipleship. Are you going to be a discipline? No, discipleship. And we'll pick up there. That's why I took my glasses off too soon. The concept of discipleship, we'll pick up there next time. Thank you all for coming today.